Session is the most wanted unusual suspect, Markia Zuckerberg. My name is Shereen Mitchell, and this is Gwinnett Clark. Our Twitter handles are Gwinnett's is her first name, at Gwinnett. Mine is at Digital Sista, Digital Sista with an A. And the hashtag for this is SuspectNZ. So we're going to just start and introduce ourselves, and then we're going to get into the presentation. The way we want to do this is that we're going to do a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit about our presentation, then we're going to open up for questions and discussion. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right. So, Gwinnett, you want to start?
Sure. My name is Gwinnett Clark, and I have been in and around the tech field for almost 20 years. I'm not a programmer or a coder, but I've been developing websites and everything from all things web-related for all that time. But I became interested and started thinking about this this topic as becoming interested in making sure that there are more women, and especially women of color and underrepresented women of color, in this area and have access to tech startups and be able to have the same access as everybody else. Because as we'll go along in our presentation, we'll show you some reasons and some statistics as to the state of things right now.
So my name is Shereen Mitchell, and the reason why I founded the organization called Digital Sisters. I was the first woman of color web firm in Washington, D.C. in the 90s. I actually am a hacker from the 80s, and it was basically during a time when you couldn't imagine seeing a young black urban girl in tech. And as I was growing up in an urban environment, I was actually deterred and distracted from going down the tech field. So I formed Digital Sisters as a way, once I figured out what the challenges were, as a way to try to address this. Digital Sisters was formed in 1999, and unfortunately, since 1999, things have not changed. We're still sort of in the same space. Although I think we're paying a little bit more attention to it, there are still some challenges that we're trying to overcome. And what we're going to do today is not talk about what the challenges are, per se. We really want to talk about solutions and getting to the next step. I think we spend a lot of time talking about what the challenges are and some of the problems in the field, but we don't spend a lot of time on the resolutions and solutions to that. For me, I started doing training with young girls as early as the second grade, girls of color. I've been doing that for years, and I can tell you all the challenges that they're facing. I can also tell you all the challenges that the industry faces to get those girls from second grade into the tech field. And so we're going to kind of talk about a little bit of that, but really talk about some of the possible solutions. Okay? So first, I just want to talk about a few stats. For those that don't know, the average high school student who happens to be a girl, 60% of them have no computer courses whatsoever out of 1.5 million. If you think about that staggering number, you understand that there is no, you know, they still have no access to computer technology and or access to, when we talk about computer technology, we don't mean just mobile phones. But actually doing coding and getting into computer courses. With that number, I would say about 1% of that number is African-American and Latino women. That 60%, you know, roughly that number is still roughly around, you know, 99% white girls. Same for 18% of girls taking AP courses. Even though 18% of girls will take AP courses, which is the core, you know, step into doing computer technology and coding, only about 1% are girls of color. That statistically, this number, even though we talk about women in the field, still overwhelmingly represents about 90 to 99% of white women. And we don't really talk about the challenges with the fact that we're not even looking at the numbers for women of color who don't exist in this. We've been celebrating recently there's now 25% of women into the tech field. And this was touted last year. And so there was an article in the Washington Post about this. And I found it very ironic because one of the things about the article that most people didn't pick up was that, yeah, we're celebrating that we've reached 25%, but the reality is in the 1980s, we were at 30%. So we can't celebrate 25% in 2011 when we've never made it back to the 30% that we had in the 80s. And again, the challenges still exist in terms of women of color there. 6% of women-led firms receive VC funding. And unfortunately, in that number, I would say less than 1% of women of color firms that receive that funding. So we're celebrating women like Virginia Rometty from IBM and Meg Whitman, who actually happen to be women CEOs from top tech firms. And we want to celebrate these women, but we also want to talk about the fact that this is probably, and actually HP has been pretty innovative because Carly Fiorina was their other first CEO, was their first CEO. So they've actually looked at having more women in the field as leaders in the tech industry, but still this number is few and far between in terms of women leading huge tech firms. As you can imagine, although we have these two women here, we have not seen any women of color leading any huge tech firms like IBM, even though IBM actually has a huge innovation diversity technology program. You still haven't seen, you know, a CEO that happens to be a woman of color. And if you have any questions, please feel free to stop me and ask at this point. When we talk about the percentages of women in computer-related occupations, as you can see here from 2009, from 2000 to 2009, there's been a shift. Although you can see that Latinas have moved from 3% to 6%, we still don't see a huge representation in the field. You can actually see the Asian women population move from 11% to 9%, yet they're over-indexed in the tech field, even though they're decreasing in terms of being in the computer-related occupations. For African-American women, you're seeing the numbers go from 12% to 16%. Although there's an increase, we still haven't seen that major increase in the field itself. And the other, and as you can see, the numbers for white women in the field have moved down from 73% to 69%. So what we want to talk about is the solutions for that. So how do we get that Markia Zuckerberg? What do we do to make that happen? What are some of the innovative ideas and steps that we can do to create that opportunity so we can see the next best and brightest come out of any area? It doesn't even have to be Silicon Valley, but that that we can really look at the places that we can look for these young girls, but also how we can keep that happening throughout the track to get the successful CEO, hopefully, of IBM or HP. Flip on that.
One of the things that we are looking at is starting early. We want to make sure that we're getting the girls early and interested in the technology fields. We want to expose them to technology. We want to expose them to the idea of getting into science and math and technology fields. So we want to make sure that we, at the very least, get them exposed and hope that we can spark an interest in them to want to go farther, to want to make sure that we can churn out or we can get those numbers and increase those numbers sheerly by starting early and starting earlier and growing the numbers there. Another thing that we want to talk about is being consistent. So it's great that we expose these girls to technology, but oftentimes somewhere in the mix they either lose it because there's no way of being consistent. They're not getting the consistent support throughout their high school years, throughout their elementary school years, and especially not in going through their college years. So we want to look at programs like there's a program that's academic focused called Higher Achievement. And this program is in Washington, D.C. And what they do is they take kids from the fifth grade. They have an intense program for 4 years after school program. But after they finish and go into high school, they still maintain contact with that student from the time they leave the official program all through college. So what we need to do is to come up with a similar solution in technology. We need to come up with, and we're proposing, coming up with programs that will follow the child, follow girls from high school, from elementary school, all through to make sure that they stay on track, stay interested, and then have the ability to enter into new fields and create these startup technologies. And we also want to introduce them just to the idea of entrepreneurship. There are a lot of programs that are out there that address entrepreneurship, but they're not geared towards the minority and urban kids. They're more geared towards, I know by the time that you're interested or introduced to entrepreneurship, many times it's on college level. And by the time, and we know what the statistics are just for the graduation rate in our community, which is very low compared to other areas in the community. So they never get that exposure because they never make it to college.
So the other thing is, because I worked with girls as young as second grade, let's just, the truth is, I've worked with both girls and boys at the same time doing what we did, sort of computer tech clubs. And some of the same stereotypes does exist. However, actually, if you put them in the same room together, the boys and the girls, they are at the same position, learning about tech, coming up with ideas with tech, being creative and being thoughtful about it. However, after that point, I would say right about the ages of 10 to 14, well, mostly 12 to 14, girls start to lose interest. They're either, disenfranchised in some way. They feel like, it's more of a guy or boys thing versus a girls thing. It's also the point in time when they start thinking about identity and they want to identify what's a woman, what's feminine. And usually technology in science and math is not one of the top tiers of that. So when we talk about be consistent, what typically has to happen, because we've worked with girls from second grade all the way up to high school, and what we found is that even if you build their self-esteem, even if you get them all the skills that they need, it's not their skill set. It is the environment that changes around them. So when they get out into doing like computer courses or working into, even other intensive tech programs, they become the only girl, and in many instances, the only girl of color. And so what typically happens in that environment is that the stereotypes then exist, they're treated differently, they have, the sort of behavior of the cliquish nature, they are excluded. Because even for me, with my techie clique, I never even realized until someone else actually pointed it out that I was the only girl. I loved technology, I was coding, I didn't look up, I didn't pay attention. I just knew there was something I loved to do and I was good at it. However, there was a certain point, and I remember this very distinctly, where we were competing for the biggest hard drives, the fastest computers, to do the quickest code, to build the best BBS boards. I was building BBS boards at the time, which is what you consider instant messaging and chat today. I was doing the first iteration of that. When we were actually starting to, work, I had three other guys with me. We started working as a team. The reality was they started to exclude me. They would go off to the corner and try to work out the code without me and then come back to be more competitive than I was. And that type of behavior is very typical and very, it happens a lot in the field. And that's when the girls start to come back to us and say, well, I don't really think this is for me. I know I'm good at it. I know I like this, but I just don't think this field is what I'm interested in. And until I started to experience that myself, I did not realize some of the challenges that some of these girls were facing. So, of course, they end up going into other fields instead of actually going out to be the next innovative, women in tech. Today, we can see that there are some other opportunities. If you've heard about the Spelman girls that beat out the kids at MIT for the best app, the best mobile app, the skill set is there. The difference is we need to make sure that we create that opportunity and give them the environment. They also have to have more exposure, and that exposure has to be consistent. They have to keep that exposure going throughout their lifespan, because what typically happens is that they'll end up with gaps at certain points in their lives, and they never come back to it.
And then we have programs like Uplift DC, wherein you have a group of kids, and they are led by an African-American woman, and they build apps for the Android market. And they've actually had several kids to have their apps accepted on the Android market. And we're talking about elementary school kids. And so the challenge is here, once is making sure that they stay, interested. And there is a gap, because we try to start early, but then there's no middle, and then there's no continuing application. I mean, there's no continuing interest. So one of the things that I'd like for us to discuss today is how do we keep the consistency in making sure that girls are continuously exposed to technology and keep it going through fruition when they are able to make their own startups and build their own startups and collaborate with other people. So let's make sure that we talk about that at the end of our presentation as an action item, and for us to go back and take that with us as we leave out of here today.
And the other is, of course, beyond Silicon Valley. I mean, we for those of you who were here, if you participated in the session with CNN, Blacks in Tech in America, one of the challenges were that, you know, that group of people had an opportunity that they had to spend 9 weeks in Silicon Valley to participate, to get into, you know, to have their startups even looked at and to have them have ability to do demos and pitch. And the challenge there is that most urban environments, most kids don't have the opportunity to go out 9 weeks. There is, you know, Williams mentioned in this session that there is an economic impact there, which is one is being away to, you know, do something for 9 weeks and not, you know, and not have to worry about income or being taken care of. The other part is, at the end of the day, most startups fail. And, you know, the fear factor of failing and not being able to take care of your household or your family is a huge impact on communities of color in many instances. They don't have that bounce, that flexibility of being able to bounce back from a failed startup and to start something else new and continue to keep up coming with ideas.
And the other thing that they mentioned yesterday was just the fact that the numbers. They oftentimes they would go around and walk out in the city and try to interact with other people, and they were the only people of color there. Maybe one or two outside of that group, but essentially they were there. So one of the things that I would like for us to discuss also is how do we supplement that economic cushion? How can we make sure that we can fund startups to go into startups of color, with people of color, to go into an incubator and not have to or to worry about the income and economic factor and allow them to operate and to fail, but hopefully succeed without feeling that can't make the rent, can't pay for food, can't pay for the daily necessities that I have to pay for because I'm at an economic disadvantage for all the other people that are in Silicon Valley. Another thing that's been rolling around in my head is I am not techie. I come from a journalism background, journalism, PR, marketing background, but I've been working in and around this field for a long time. And one of the things that I've noticed is that I, as a non-coder, have a hard time getting in. I'm interested in it. I want to participate. I have lots of ideas for apps and things that I'd like to see, but I can't code. So I have to find someone else who can partner with me to do the code. Well, there's no place for me to go to do that. It's hard for me to find a coder or someone willing to take my idea and move forward with it or even collaborate with me. So the STEM plus D is adding the design and the creativity aspect to technology and startups. There even Harvard Business Review has started writing more articles about the need for design and creativity in startups. As well as there's also the Designer Fund, which is a funder. They won't fund startups unless you have someone or a designer who is creative. Unless you have a designer in your base or in your core group, they won't fund you because they understand that the importance of creativity in creating technology, because they want to make sure that in using the design thinking, that at the end of the day, your chances of succeeding is better because you can build a product that people want to use.
Oops, sorry. The other thing is, the challenges I think that are faced in terms of when we look at STEM, you know, which is science, tech, and math, is that science, tech, engineering, and math, is that in most instances, what I find is that we forget that some of the most innovative technologies that we have, for example, our cell phone, came from an artist, a woman who was an actress, and her pianist. It came from someone with a creative mind who wasn't a techie and wasn't a coder. And yet, what we do today is that we completely forget that concept. I think we're now getting around to that. We're looking at the creative side now. We're looking at the design side. We're looking at the big idea side, and we're looking at ways to get, you know, to create those products now. Whereas I think we started in the beginning, we're doing like a full circle. In the beginning, it was more the creative mind. So we now focus on coders, and now we're going back to thinking about how do we get things to be more creative and more innovative. And so what we need to do is have the balance of those two pieces, not either or. And design helps us look at STEM from a different perspective as well. And then the last one is the neutral pitch. So for those of you who are used to pitching for VCs and doing demos, you usually have to pitch your tech company and your product to someone. And hopefully, either one or two things happen. I've seen this in two ways. One is like a hackathon. You come up with an idea and pitch your idea and have people come work with you to come up with, you know, to help you create your product. Or you have your product already, you've been working on it, and you're now trying to pitch it to a VC. And so you get up in front of a stage and you have to do, you have to pitch and have all this energy and innovation. And for those who have seen pitches and things like that, and demos on the stage before, you understand that, you know, the person gets nervous, they're trying to do all these different things. But the other part that happens that we don't really talk about is that there is a judgment that's already being placed when you walk up on that stage. If you're a woman, if you're a man, if you're a person of color, that there's an expectation of what you're going to be able to produce or what you're going to, what your product is going to be about. A lot of times I've heard from plenty of women tech entrepreneurs going after VC funding, the first thing the VCs say, what's this, about babies, clothing, or, some kind of, what is your product going to be, babies, clothing, or some kind of, marketing, feminine product thing. And it's usually very interesting because that's when that person gets up on the stage, that's exactly what they think they're going to be talking about. Whereas if a guy got up on that same stage to come pitch a product, they're expecting something different from them. But even if that guy comes up on that stage and pitches a sports product, because I've seen a zillion sports apps, no one actually says to them, what's this going to be, a sports app? They're given the benefit of the doubt. So what we're suggesting, or coming, this idea that we've come up with, is something like sort of like the American Idol against The Voice. Which is, instead of looking and watching and looking for that image that fits the tech entrepreneur and the successful tech entrepreneur and product that's going to come up with the innovation, what we're actually saying, let's not look at the person, have all the judges have their backs like The Voice to the person that's pitching, and actually just see the screen in front of them. The person doing the pitching, either in the back or in the back area, and let them go ahead and sell their product, and let the VCs then make a judgment call about the product from there. So they don't look at the product from the image perspective of the person who's trying to promote it, and give them an opportunity to say, well, maybe this is a good product, and go from there. Versus, when they walk up there and they're expecting, a certain kind of pitch and a certain kind of product coming out of that person, depending on their gender or their race or whatever.
I mean, case in point, I had a guy tell me a story. He went to pitch a client. It was he went in there. He's Indian, and he went in there with his white counterpart. So they start the pitch. They talk about the product, and they discuss it with the client. And the client gets really interested. When he starts asking questions, he turns to the Indian guy. The Indian guy says, "I don't know anything about it. I'm in marketing." So the assumption there was that just based on the fact that he looked a certain way, that he automatically assumed that this was the tech person and the other person was the marketing person. So it happens every day. We all have, you know, some biases and stereotypes that we have to deal with on a daily basis, but there's a way, you know, we need to get over that and make sure that we're, one, recognizing the stereotype, and two, figuring out in our own mind how to get past that and how to move on. So one of the things, you know, that we can do, even in the hiring practice, there was an article I read about it from a hiring manager. He was under the assumption that he was being as gender and race and age unbiased as he possibly could. And it wasn't until he decided to take name, age, education, and some other things, you know, all those things away from the off of the resumes that he was seeing, that he realized how still biased he was, because he wasn't able to see that this person was maybe 40 years old or 20 years old, that the person was a woman, that the person may have been a man, that the person may have been African American versus Indian, or, you know, he couldn't tell that. He based it solely on their qualifications, what they did, and how they were able to present themselves. And then when he made that realization, he acknowledged and recognized how those factors influenced his perception of the resume that was right in front of us. So, and I mentioned that to start a discussion about how we can move beyond those factors in terms of making sure that even in our own day-to-day life that we can try to or make an attempt to be more unbiased in our assessment of people and their skill set solely by looking at them or solely by reading their names.
So we're going to leave it there and start asking some questions. Because one of the things I want to ask people is, when you think about the next big tech person who happens to be a woman of color, do you happen to know any? Do you know any clusters of women that you could say, hey, I know someone's doing some crazy innovative things right now? Or do any names come to your head right now? Anyone you know can think of? I always find it interesting because even after the president became the president, one of the big things that happened was like the top 50 top tech people, the president's picture was up there. And I kept thinking, should I be offended, or should I just be happy that there's a man of color up on that, you know, up on the screen? But the reality was, he doesn't, you know, he had to learn how to tweet. I think the Red Cross had to teach him how to tweet for the first time on, you know, himself. So how do we look at the variables about who's innovative in tech? The other thing is, what does success mean? Because when I've gone to a lot of tech conferences, And I've seen other, you know, people of color on the stage who happen to be African American or women of or Latinas or whatever. Many of the times, those people are people that may be a celebrity, an artist, someone who already has sort of a following that they're willing to put on the stage. So how do we get past those type of interpretations to get to the marquees of the world? Because they're out there. I've seen them. I've worked with them. I've seen some cool, innovative things that these kids can come up with. But we can't talk. We haven't been able to get them past this sort of, it is sort of a glass ceiling, that to get to the next level, to be the next, you know, the next Zuckerberg, the next Jobs, the next, you know, HP CEO.
And one of the things I also, you know, would like to ask also is, if Barack Obama and Michelle Obama were not the president and the first lady and they had a tech company, would you hire them? just not know, you know, without their status currently in the world, if they come to you, if they've come to you and say, okay, I want to pitch this idea, would you accept it? So that's another, you know, question or aspect I'd like to think of, you know, question I'd like to ask. And then to piggyback on what Rasheen was, Shireen, sorry, Rasheen. I'm nervous.
I got a new name.
To piggyback on what Shireen was saying with, you know, can you come up with names? Just look in your cell phone. How diverse is your cell phone? I mean, how many people of color or how many white people do you have in your cell phone? Just as a mere networking, who do you talk to?
That has some innovative stuff going on. Anybody has any names or anything they want to share?
Well, I was going to say that.
Two?
I was going to say that that it's interesting that you asked the question, Glenette, when you said, would I hire them? And you know, coming from a graduate of a black university and working with several black organizations, and this is sad, but immediately I said no, because I actually do want more diversity. I actually think I do need to go beyond just the black experience, and I am currently in that position. There's this tendency to think that we all, because we are of color, only go to of color. And then the pendulum swings the other way, and you're trying so hard to avoid bias that you don't go to color because you don't want to be perceived that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the middle ground is between those two, but I think that I said no out of my own bias because of what I think is going to be perceived by somebody else,
right.
Knowing that my real goal. So if it were the Obamas and some Latinos and an Asian and Caucasian, then I would have been more apt to say yes, absolutely. But if you're down one track, and I don't care what that one track is, or one particular area of diversity, then I probably am not going to hire you. Because I would like to think we can start being more inclusive, but of course that's my pie in the sky thing.
And I think that's a good observation because, you know, even though we think that, you know, we want to be diverse, but we also want to hire the best person for the job, be it white, black, purple, or green. We want to hire the best person for the job. But in reality, if you're a black person and you hire another black person, it's going to automatically be perceived as, she just hired that person because they're black. That's it. Regardless of the qualifications, that's why you hired that person. And unfortunately, on the other side, that perception is not there. It's not, you know, that may be the reason. They may have only hired that person because, you know, because they're white. However, it's not thought of in the same way.
I was going to say that. It's like if we look at the tech industry, they hire their own. Like you look around, you know, you got a whole bunch of white guy hackers hiring other white guy hackers. I mean, they don't think anything's wrong with it. But as us of color, if we do that, there's a little bit of a problem to click. And I thought about this the other day when we still have some of the stereotypes that, you know, as long as there's only one or two of us in the room, everything's fine. But if it's like half of us in the room, then somehow the quality of work has changed. And that sentiment has to change as well. The other piece is, yes, it's easy. I mean, just as a person of color, you know, it's easy for me to go, you know, and find those that I already know who are doing innovative things because I already know those people. Just like the comment that Arrington said, I don't know any African-American CEOs for the CNN thing because he sat back and had to realize that he just doesn't have that in his community. So everyone who said, well, I know plenty of African-American CEOs who happen to be, you know, tech entrepreneurs, that just meant his circle was smaller in that particular regard. And how do we get past those issues? Because really, in many instances, it is about the network. I was just in a session about tech superwoman mentors and mentees, and that's one of the examples that they talked about. It's more about the network and the lack of network than it is about the skill sets and the ability. And the reality is, the more you see women of color doing innovative things, the more that there's a representation of that, the more likely you believe that that possibility is there, that you will see some innovation and come up with some cool things coming out there. And I used to, you know, for me as a techie, the guys I worked with started working for AOL and all this stuff when the whole big boom started happening, and my crazy behind thought I could save the world. instead of going to get the millions everybody else got. But the reality was, when it really came down to it, if I went to go to work for AOL, I had a door open to me because I already had people in the door who were going to open it for me. That opportunity is not there for everyone. And so even though we have some crazy innovative ideas going on out there with some of the youth, and particularly women of color, they don't have that door open. They don't have that network of opportunity to come say, hey, I have this idea. I want to share this with you. The other thing that was talked about in the other session was that the sharing thing. You know, there's still a little bit of a cultural stigma about sharing your ideas with someone who happens to be of another race, where their ideas have been stolen. And so they're so afraid to share and work together and hack and come up with these ideas because they're afraid that those ideas would be stolen. And so instead of them sharing and letting other people know what they're doing, they're actually clustering and hiding so that you don't know that these places exist or these people exist. I've gone to conference after conference of communities of color, techs of color. I've been to a place where I've seen CIOs and CTOs who are all of color, and they work for companies like Walmart and Kmart and Coca-Cola, but we don't talk about them. We don't even know they exist. And so part of that helps them, you know, helps to keep the culture going, because those people stick to themselves and they have their own little cluster that they talk to, you know, each other about, because they don't want to be seen as the black person in IT. They want to be seen as the expert in the field that they do, and they happen to work for a Coca-Cola or a Kmart.
They just happen to be black.
And they just happen to be black. And so those are some of the challenges when we're trying to look for the next one, where we have to start thinking about where are they coming from and what are some of the challenges about finding them.
And to piggyback on what Shireen was saying earlier, is that one of the things that, we grow in the community, Danielle wouldn't have to worry about, am I going to be perceived as hiring a black person just because they're black? The perception would change to, oh, Danielle is hiring the best person who happens to be black. So we shift the paradigm to not so much removing, not especially removing the color, but elevating the status of being more. Being an expert in our field rather than just being the black expert.
You had a question?
Yeah. Did a question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over here.
The creative director is black and he hired me, so I had my friend was having a conversation with me, like, did he hire you because you were black? And I kind of second-guessed myself to think I was the best person and that he saw something in me that, we're the two only black people in the department. Lingo thing going on. Am I doing the best work I'm doing? And am I hired? I'm good at that job, or did he hire me because I'm black? So there's always that kind of conscious thing, and I think it's really important for girls of color coming up in tech for them to not necessarily be like, okay, yeah, I'm black, everyone's going to feel sorry for me and hire me because I'm black, and then think, okay, yeah, I don't really have to be good, but I'm okay, but because I'm black, then it's okay because I can get that kind of black pass and get into. I think it's important to build that kind of forget your color for a moment and be the best you can be, so they'll hire you for being the best you can be and not because you're a below par person and you're of color.
And you bring up a really good point that, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. So you bring up a really good point as well, because the other aspect of this is that, there are many people who have been in, you can't hear me? Testing. Sorry. Testing. I'll just hold it. The other aspect of those that are in the field, and this happened, you know, with the CNN, you know, the Blacks in Tech, is that they felt like people were saying to them, you're just being given a handout at this point. And so that was the other challenge, where you walk in the door and you're saying, I have the best possible, you know, I have the best, you know, app, I have the best, you know, company, but people will look at you and say, no, we're only, you know, giving you an opportunity because you happen to be Black, and we're looking for diversity, but we're not really looking for quality out of you. And so that stigma also is very prevalent, and it's really hard sometimes to dance that line. And then the other part about it is, if that's not the case, the other end of it is they're representing all African Americans. And so when they walk in the door, if they screw up, which is the other pressure and fear, that they're representing every, you know, every possible, you know, spectrum of the Black community in the in this field. So if they screw up, then there's no other opportunity for anybody else.
Right. And it also, and every time I think about this, I think about the, I guess the New York Times reporter, I think his name is Jason, and how he kept writing article and article and article after, right, that were completely almost made up. But they never fired him. They kept letting him write, and they kept letting him write. But he was the Black person. So it always made me think that maybe it was the reverse, because they didn't want to be perceived as being anti-affirmative action by not firing this person, even though he was clearly an incompetent journalist. He was clearly incompetent, but they didn't want to fire him because he was the token Black, or probably at that time the token Black person. So, there's bias on both sides. So either you get a handout because of it, because of your color, or the assumption is that, you know, that's how you got in, because of color. Like, I've actually had someone to call me, well, we're all grown-ups, a bitch, because I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. I applied to Georgetown Law School. I got on the waiting list, and someone walked up and actually said, called me a bitch, because he said, the only reason why you got on that waiting list is because you're Black. I'm like, oh, okay. He just happened to be, you know, a white guy. But he's like, the only reason why you're on that waiting list is because you're Black. I didn't even get on the waiting list. So it happens, and it happens every day now.
But we have to get over those. Those are some of the challenges we have to get over. You have a question? Oh, okay. Anyone else?
I've got four comments. For the next generation of girls, kids in general,
this one. You want me to use this one? Okay.
Are available to them online to expose them and give them access to the type of knowledge. Building applications for becoming one of those Spelman women who beat out MIT. My wife is proud to be a Spelman grad. She appreciated that. But are there any tools, resources online that kids could access?
He already asked the question now. So the question was, are there any tools where kids can access some of these, you know, tools to be the next, you know, person in tech and that kind of thing. Not only are there tools out there, but there are also programs. As someone said the other day, like, you know, Stanford has all their app development software online. You know, you can actually just take that down and have a class with that. I've seen class after class get created and program after program get created to get girls in tech. It's still a huge nonprofit field. It's not unfortunately, it's not a for-profit field. I have a colleague who actually does a lot with teen entrepreneurs, and Nifty is another a great group that's trying to do a lot of this with the tech entrepreneurs as well, and building that from you know, young age on up to build these apps. Again, the challenge with these is not so much the skill set or the ability to have those programs around. It's after. It's the track. It's getting from them learning and knowing to actually being able to implement and have the networks necessary to show off what they've been able to do. And in many instances, most of the schools that can do that or have done that, as typical, I always say this all the time, you know, Stanford, the reason why half of the Zuckerbergs and the Gates of the world quit after 2 years is because after they were able to build their product, they were able to pitch VCs and went off and built their companies. That option is not an option at Howard University or any of the other black colleges. So even though they can come up with these innovative things, as I've seen them there at these universities as well, the Spelman thing was great that they had national attention over that. But the reality is that's not a standard in most of these urban and or, you know, Latino or African-American colleges. They don't have the universities. They don't actually have that ability to say, we're going to take all you students, go through this program, and we're going to put you in front of VCs and learn how to, you know, not only pitch your product, but get good ideas from the VCs on what to do next to make your product better. That's not available across.
And as far as the online, I think that there are plenty of online resources. Can you hear me? There are lots of online resources, but I think that what makes the big difference is the hands-on. I mean, you can go online, girls can go online and actually research any and everything that they'd like, but it makes absolutely no sense, or it may not have the same impact as if there weren't somebody with their hand on their shoulder guiding them through the process, because there are so many things out there. You know, I tried looking at the Stanford stuff, and I can't understand it at all.
But not that hard.
I know that if I had somebody like, you know, like a Shireen or someone else sitting side by side to explain it to me, you know, I might actually understand some, you know, what I'm looking at and what I'm reading. But without that hands-on and someone looking over your shoulder and mentoring and telling you and explaining things from experience, then it's a lot more difficult. And so if we can get more people in, not only get more experienced people, and they could be of any color, to reach back and say, okay, I'm going to help this girl to get through, and I'm going to help her to navigate through to reach her goals, it's not going to happen. And it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't have to be a person of color in an urban environment. It could be anybody, as long as they take the interest and take the time and put the time in to help out.
You know, it's still a network. It's still, you know, my little tech click was why I got better at tech, right? It just so happened that they were guys and I didn't pay attention. And the funny part is they did do the, you know, little crazy things that guys do. It's like, oh, you're some crazy girl doing this crazy thing and coming up with all these like crazy things to say to me. And I was like, yeah, but I bet you I'm going to beat you with this, you know, I'm going to make this happen. And unfortunately, that kind of environment isn't available to everybody. And so how do we get the next, you know, opportunities? Like, it's not just having like sort of these little hackathons, but it's like getting girls together, letting them come up with stuff and create and use these tools, and then have them be able to share that and build their own networks, and then on and then on and then on. Because it's not going to just happen in the classroom. I know for a fact that every time we taught a class, that the kids that came back with the best product were the ones that went home and they all studied together and tried to hack together, and they came back with that product. It's not just the classroom. It's way more. There's a lot more that goes around that. And all the kids who didn't have that opportunity or exposure did not come up with those bigger ideas and the best product.
I would just like to say, I live in Dallas, Texas. But I live in Dallas, and in the area that I'm in, they have constantly, there's always some kind of event. Like, there are mobile hackathons where you spend a weekend and people work towards creating an app, or startup weekend, if anyone's ever heard of that, where you basically spend the whole weekend, you know, trying to create a product. And the problem that I found is going to a lot of those events as an African-American female, there aren't many African-Americans or people of color in general, specifically not females. And so it's like you go to these events and then you have no network of support at that event to keep you motivated or make you feel like you should even be there. And so it would be nice to see maybe like niche groups of people working together outside of events and then going to those types of things together, so that when you get somewhere where people are working on things and people are creating things, you have more people that can relate to you, that will talk to you, because nobody wants to go to that kind of event, and especially even as a woman, and sit in a corner and nobody talks to you and nobody wants you on their team. And I think that's probably more the problem. It's not that there aren't places where people can go and learn and experience and, you know, get that hands-on experience. It's that you get there and then it seems like there's nothing for you because you don't look like everybody else that's in the room. So.
And you're not being included. I mean, it's the conversation, I always say this, it's like the conversation about the doors open, this opportunity is just out there for everyone. It, you know, it is. However, the door being open doesn't mean that I'm invited in. And once I step in that door, I say this all the time, once I step in that door, I could, you know, try to network, but if everyone's acting like I don't belong there and they shouldn't talk to me, then that you don't have the same opportunity. And so it's like, how do you bridge that and how do you deal with those things? And I think, you know, one strategy is what you said, maybe, you know, as a cluster and go. I think we have to be very careful not to do, you know, other silos, because that's the other challenge. Like, you can go the complete opposite way and you end up with a hackathon for all women, you have end up with a hackathon for all African Americans, you end up with a hackathon for all Latinos, and at the end of the day you still have the segregation and no one's still working together and knows someone in the network who happens to be XYZ that can do something and showing, you know, hey, there's some cool people doing some cool things out there. I know so many mobile app developers who happen to be African Americans, and I swear nobody knows who they are and know how to reach them or talk to them or have them or invite them to, even to some of these hackathons in the first place.
Or they don't show up.
Well, they don't show up.
I produce in DC. I produce UX Camp DC and Mobile UX Camp DC. And the last year's UX Camp, I out of 125 people, there were four. Four women of color, four black women there. Two of them were on the committee, you know, two of them were, you know, on the committee to put them together, including myself. Actually, no, I think it was three. So three black people out of 100 and almost 130 people. And that's all that showed up. Now, I know that there are others that are in the user experience community. I know that there are others, but they didn't show up. So, you know, half the battle is just showing up. You just have to put yourself out there. And even with UX, you know, mobile UX camp, I know of a lot of, you know, mobile app developers of color. They weren't there either. They didn't show up. So they missed out on the opportunity to meet and talk to other people in the field to collaborate. I know of lots of people who left that day with jobs, who left with collaboration and joint projects, but we weren't there. So we have to actually start and make the effort to actually show up. We just have to be there.
Any other questions? No? All right. So my final thoughts on this. You had something to say?
Yeah, just had. So I noticed that, you know, even though we have a mixed crowd in here, there, you know, we only got questions from the African American people in the room. So I'm reaching out to see if anyone else other than us has a question. Yes.
I was wondering, you talked about how, you know, black people only hire black people and then it's not the same for when white people hire white people. But how do you think you can get around that where it's like, oh, the white person hires a black person because of quota or logo and hire minorities, and the black person hires a black person just because they want another person of their race or ethnicity. So how do you get around that and make it okay
for people to hire, you know, people other than themselves, if that makes sense?
I think what is going to happen, what should happen, or is that it's going to have to take a shift in paradigm. It's going to take a conscious effort to say, you know what, this person hired, you know, I trust this person well enough that they hired the best person for the job. Not because they were black and, you know, the person hiring was black, but because I trust them enough to make the best decision for my company, regardless of the color. So I think that it's a matter of trust and actually building up the trust within your company to trust that person to make the right decision versus, you know, the other way, the stigma.
It still has to come from higher up. I think with all of this, it's still more of a cultural phenomenon. Like, we're really dealing with human behavior, you know, and it's like, how do you, you know, I always say, I have this hashtag that I say, there's no tech fix for human behavior. At the end of the day, it's about us, it's about our relationships, and it's about how we engage with people. And so when that may be a stigma, even in the instance where you hear, like if you happen to hear that, or you've seen that, or someone says that to you or something like that, you should go try to figure out how to dispel that instead of letting it just become part of the commentary. Like, why do you think that? Even bring up the conversation in a way that's to sort of help bridge why that's a possibility. Why couldn't it just be, like, to ask the questions that are important? I think the other piece of it is also, you know, there's the other challenge I've seen on the other end of this is that they'll hire a person of color or they hire a woman, and they expect that woman as her sole job or that person of color as their sole job to diversify the company all by themselves. So typically, even in that instance, even though sometimes this you know concept is that they're only hiring this person because they're black, the other end of it is that I've seen where they want those people in their company because they don't know how to reach out to the other, you know, to make their company more diverse, and they're putting the weight on the shoulders of just that person. And so, so when we talk about this, there's so many tiers to that, but I think most of it is just really trying to hammer out some of the challenges that we already have. I always said, you know, I've worked on the issues of digital divide for a very long time, and the one thing I've said is that the one thing about the digital divide, it hasn't changed. Like, in reality, we're still in the same place. The only thing that's changed is the tools we're using. We got a new tool to talk about. We got a new cool app to talk about. And the issues of diversity, if you actually look at every entry point for the new technology, the new app, you get the early adopters. Those are usually those people in the same network pulling their friends along. And then, you know, they start inviting other people around. And so if we start thinking about how do we make sure that early adopting group is diverse, we can start pulling that, you know, making the same opportunities available.
One of the things that I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, can you pass on?
No, go ahead.
Sure. I just had the question of basically you talking about how...
I'm not good at talking into these things.
Yeah.
Okay. You were talking about how the whole thing about people hiring African-American, that person feeling like perhaps they were hired because they're an African-American. Do you feel that there is that pressure for women just in general, with women hiring women? I mean, it's possible that a man might feel that hiring a man, it doesn't really feel like that necessarily, but I'm just curious as to just like women in general, are they still feeling that in any workplace?
Yeah, I would say yes. Absolutely. I think that happens as well. And I think it almost always goes back to stereotyping and how we stereotype people. And I always have this conversation with my daughter, and I said, you know, and tell her, it's stereotype is part of the human brain. We can't get around it. It's hardwired into our system. However, it's what we do with that information that makes us human and that makes a difference. That makes a difference in how we use the information. So in terms of, you know, addressing the issue with, you know, being stereotypical of, well, you know, black people only hire black people. White people only, you know, white people only hire white people. White women or black women, women only hire white women. If we can understand, you know, if we can get past that, and that is a big thing of moving past that assumption of stereotyping everything and just trust that person is doing the best job, you know, and hiring that the best person for the job, not because they're a woman, not because they're black, not because they're Asian, but because they are the best at what they do.
And thank you all for asking questions now. I appreciate that.
I guess we had to call you out to get you to be wanting to ask questions.
Hi, I run a tech company up in Minneapolis, and I think a lot of tech companies are you know, pretty desperate for talent, period. And I do worry, you know, when we go to look for talent and hire for talent, that our team is not diverse enough. It's something that we look to try to, you know, build because we think it makes us a stronger team. So, you know, I don't know if I have a question or if this is a statement, but it's definitely something as a person who's trying to build a strong team, you know, diverse, you know, perspectives and experiences is something that we really value, and we're just struggling with how to kind of build that team. And, you know, so if I wanted to, you know, diversify my team, you know, am I, you know, sort of, you know, purposely trying to, you know, hire, you know, a person of color because I think that automatically is going to, you know, make my team better. So I struggle with those things, but that's something that I find a lot of people who are building teams want to do. We just don't really know how to do it or the right way. But that said, I just feel like there are tons of opportunities for, you know, building these diverse teams because a lot of us do believe that it really builds a stronger organization.
And I thank you for bringing that up. And I think it is a challenge. And part of what we were trying to do here was not to talk about all the challenges there, but trying to come up with solutions. And I think at the end of the day, you wanting to diversify your team should not be a bad thing, right? And I think the question goes back to sort of the quantifiable piece. It's like, I'm going to build a stronger team. But I think in many instances, what we want to say is that we're building a better team. We're building a team that now will be able to produce a product that can reach a broader audience. And that, to me, sometimes is probably the best way to kind of look at it. The other part is that, you know, the same thing happens. You have to look at your networks, trying to reach out to find those, you know, people. How do you do that? Who do you know? Who do they know? And you start asking those questions. But I would say, on average, most tech firms generally don't ask the question to say, well, you know, I have this position, and we're also looking for women. You know, they sometimes feel uncomfortable about asking that question. We're also looking for, you know, African American who may be able to fit this, because they're afraid that they may look like they're you know, sort of weighing the race versus the qualifications for that position.
The best thing I can say is just to be intentional. You know, that's, you know, be intentional, but try to stay as unbiased as possible, because you don't want to just hire a black person or, you know, an Asian person just because you want to, you know, be diverse, but be intentional about seeking those people out and going outside of your immediate network, because they're out there. So yeah, just be intentional.
I know we're kind of close to time, yeah.
Yep, we're done.
So I want to thank everybody.
Thanks.
Our hashtag's up there, and I have my cards if you were interested in talking more about this later. Thanks.
Thank you.